Over the past four decades, Craig Lewis has pulled a few theatrical rabbits out of his hat, but can he successfully transform a story about addiction, lies, denial, degradation, pain, and remorse into a play worthy of being called Ode to Joy? Well, his latest, a Rattlesnake production currently at the Cherry Lane Theater until April 19th, is about an alcoholic, pill-popping painter who meets what turns out to be the love of her life while they're drinking shots at a bar. The play moves back and forth in time, following the course of this new relationship and revisiting her previous one, which broke up over her addictions. And joining me now are playwright Craig Lewis and actors Catherine Irby, who plays Adele the painter, and Arliss Howard, who plays Bill. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And Catherine and Arliss, when you read the script, what appealed to you about these characters? Were you at all worried that you might not be able to make them likable?
I don't know that that ever really crossed my mind, because we read the play out loud for the first time for a packed audience at the Cherry Lane, and they howled with laughter and really enjoyed them. It's a fine line to walk, because they do kind of crazy stuff.
Well, Craig, how important is it for the play that we like these people?
Well, I don't know if it is so important that you like them as much as it is that you be entertained by them. I mean, you don't have to really care for Richard III, but he's damn funny, and he speaks that iambic pentameter, you know, so it's fun to listen to him.
Well, and Shakespeare did write that iambic pentameter. These people do some pretty awful things to each other and to themselves. So how do you go about casting these roles?
I didn't cast it. David Van Asselt, the artistic director at the Rattlesnake, said you should cast Katie Irby and Arliss Howard.
It was that simple?
Yeah. And I went, okay. And we did a reading, and it is true. Everybody just fell on the ground screaming with laughter. And I thought, well, I'm going to do everything this man tells me.
Although you did direct it.
Well, they helped me direct it.
Now, Arliss, one of the most frightening elements of the play for me is that Bill, your character, is a surgeon. Adele is a painter. It's one thing to paint when you're inebriated, but to operate on a patient drunk, well, that's a bit scary.
Yeah, it is, and I'm not sure if that ever happened to me. I know I had my legs set one time by a guy who was drunk.
Well, in the old days, they used to have you drink before they operated on you. But is it possible for a sane person to actually do an operation after a night of drinking the way that Bill does when he first meets Adele?
I don't know if sanity is at issue. I think that it's the play is largely about humans, and I think that this particular, if you want to call it dysfunction or an error in judgment or whatever it is, it's fairly widespread in terms of people thinking they can do things that they probably should not do in the condition that they are.
How did your leg turn out? I didn't see you limping when you were on
stage.
No, I mean, I
probably could have stitched it better than he did. But, the actual setting of the bone, he did a really great job on it.
Now, Craig, I understand this play comes out of your personal experience?
I've known many drunk surgeons in my day.
Well, if you write a play when you're inebriated, and a fair number of plays have been written in that condition, I guess they can be fixed up when you're in better shape.
Well, I was reading Tennessee Williams' letters, and he was up in Provincetown writing a Streetcar Named Desire, and he was drinking red wine all day every day, and that didn't turn out so bad. But I certainly can't write when I've been drinking or taking pills. I have to be sober to be able to put together, to make the nouns agree with the verbs.
But don't many people believe that there's a relationship between alcohol and creativity?
I don't know if they believe that. I think what is true is that a lot of writers find it difficult to turn off their minds at the end of the day, as a lot of artists do, and a lot of people who are excited by their work and their lives, and that it takes a lot of energy to turn those voices off. I was just reading somewhere a quote of Camus, which I'll butcher, but he said, nobody realizes that for some people it takes an enormous amount of energy just to be normal. Mm. And
I've read it in the original French. Your translation's okay.
Is it?
Catherine, when you looked at this part, well, let's talk about being normal and all of that. Uta Hagen said that that one of the hardest things about playing a drunk is that there's a tendency to slur your words. But she said people who are drunk do everything possible to articulate even more clearly. So is that something that you take to heart in playing this role?
Oh, yeah. We, our fearless leader over here did not want us to slur our words. And I felt in the beginning that I kind of needed to at least rehearse that way to, because it really helped me to get it, just pull it into my body somehow.
Well, there's a lot of physicality to this as well.
Well, that scene... I personally never thought we'd get it on our feet, on its feet. It's pretty an amazing scene, and it's one of my favorites in the play.
And you come out of it alive every night?
Every night, miraculously. But it sounded like one thing on paper, and then to do all the vomiting and the falling and all that stuff seemed really scary.
Arliss, was that choreographed?
Oh, very specifically, And at a very slow speed originally, you know, like anything, like any magic trick. It's sort of like a sleight of hand. You have to go very slowly so you can finally get it at a speed where it wants to play. And I'm always amazed at the delight that goes back and forth between us as we're doing it.
You're having fun at the same time.
Just a ball. It's like being a little kid, you know. Yeah.
When you looked at this part, Catherine, did you think this is pretty far from Detective Alexandra Eames, the character you played in Law & Order, Criminal Intent for 10 years? Did she ever drink after work, do you think?
Oh, Alex Eames? Yeah, she drank scotch. Straight up. Many fingers, I guess is what you would say. I don't know that I was thinking about Detective Eames, but I was really grateful to read this play and that David introduced me to Craig and that I had met Arliss, and now we have Roxana, and it's such a gift.
Have any of you counted how many shots the characters drink in the scene where they meet at the bar?
I counted them.
Really?
Yeah. I think Bill he's been drinking before she shows up, and I think Bill has drunk about a liter of single malt scotch by the time the scene is over, and he's a great drinker.
Why is he there?
He lives upstairs, which is convenient, and but he's also
he still has to climb back upstairs.
Right. he has a wife that's been dead for a few years, and on this particular evening he's celebrating or mourning her passing. And I'm not sure actually if there is a line between those two, celebrating and mourning. As we do the play more and more, I've started to think that this ritual we have of mourning, celebrating, whatever it is as the years go on, the whole idea of mourning and celebrating seem to kind of merge.
Well, they often involve drinking alcohol.
Yes, absolutely. And gathering people together and telling stories.
There's a point when Bill just starts pouring them two drinks at a time.
Yeah.
Now, Catherine, why is your character there?
She has been painting all day, which can be a very solitary, lonely experience. And she has... I mean, we came up with a whole idea that she's got this boyfriend who's texting her who she doesn't really like, but he's you know, Mr. Right Now. And she's gone out to maybe get ice cream. She said she's going to run an errand, but she's gone to the bar and Bill's there.
Well, both of their relationships before involved alcohol. Bill's wife committed suicide because she was an alcoholic. Wouldn't that prevent him from seriously dating anyone he meets at a bar who drinks like Adele?
No, I think if you just look at the baseline, you know, indicator of human behavior, people who believe that if they go to work one more day at that same job, they'll kill themselves and continue to show up years after they made that decision would sort of prove out that we kind of habitually behave until it becomes, you know, for whatever reason, and who can say what that is, a moment of reckoning, which certainly hasn't happened for him at the beginning of the play.
And Catherine, your character's previous great love broke up because she was an alcoholic.
Because Adele's an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And a liar.
And so finding somebody who also drinks as heavily as she does probably would be reassuring.
Yeah, there is a moment when he says, "You want another," when I think Adele is like, "Oh, yes, yes, yes." Great.
My guests are two of the three actors in Ode to Joy, Catherine Irby and Arliss Howard, also Roxana Hope, in Craig Lucas's new play called Ode to Joy. I don't know where Beethoven comes into this, but he wrote and directed. And Craig, one of the things that you do, and I'm not sure it's fair, is to give these characters incredibly witty and literate dialogue while they're totally blitzed. Aren't most drunks bores?
They can be at a certain point if you're not drinking with them. But that first scene is very much about falling in love with someone while you're drinking. And so I hoped to create that lovely, pardon the word, intoxicating feeling of being in the glow of someone's intelligence and someone who is speaking to you as if you will understand their illusions. And I think it's been a long time since Bill has met someone who is even interested in the things he's interested
well,
in.
Well, the conversation is more interesting than the conversations most people have in philosophy class, and cleverer as well. I was wondering whether people can talk intelligently and wittily about Kierkegaard after they've downed 10 shots, or does it only sound that way to another equally impaired person?
Well, Bill talks very wittily, so yes, they can. I read this wonderful book by Jonathan Lear called A Case for Irony, and it turned my attention to Kierkegaard, who I always assumed was just way over my head. And, you know, the writing was so witty and accessible and delightful, discursive. And Kierkegaard loved to go for long, long walks, and I suspect was quite a bit of a drinker. But that's just my supposition.
You say that when you started writing this play, you thought it might be your long day's journey into night?
Yes, but it turned into something altogether different. It turned into a comedy, and that probably is what I'm best suited for. There's a funny Charles Ludlam quote that if you're going to tell people the truth, it had better be funny or they'll kill you. And I subscribe to that idea.
Now let's talk about Adele's paintings. Do you think of yourself, because, you know, we don't really have paintings, but in developing your character, Catherine, do you think that she's a good painter?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I do. I think she's very good.
Well, in the scene when Mala, who is to become Adele's first profound love, enters her studio to look at her paintings, Mala says of them, "This isn't for a slaughterhouse. This isn't for frightening refugees from crossing the border." So she does really powerful, perhaps gruesome work.
Yes, I think, the juxtaposition of beauty and horror or ugliness or, you know, so.
Now, the play was already in development when Philip Seymour Hoffman died, but I suspect that that was something you also thought about when you were rehearsing this? No? Okay.
No, but when the day that happened, we were in rehearsal, and I think Katie got a...
Yeah, my daughter left me a message. I went to school with him.
Yeah, so it was certainly something that, you know, paused the rehearsal. Mm.
Well, he was on the show a number of times. I don't know whether it was during one of the dry periods, but I never would have suspected, which is to some degree what these people would also, the characters in this play would also rely on when they're not at a bar, that people might not suspect that they have a serious problem with alcohol.
Yeah, I think the notion of alcoholism and drug abuse is, in this particular case, is the framework that the story is built on, the architecture in a way. But I think that Craig has bigger fish to fry, and I think as regards alcoholics and drug addicts, they're often incredibly strong, functioning, you know, people who, if not impaired by it, are not slowed down.
No, is only running until the April 19th at the Cherry Lane? Mm-hmm. Then what, something else coming in at that time?
Yes, there is another play following us, but I'm assuming we're moving to Broadway.
Well, you do
Am
have
I mistaken?
You do have a memorable title here. why did you apply one of Beethoven's most famous titles to your play?
I used to think that joy was a form of elation. And as I got older and quieter and more comfortable with myself and with life, I began to suspect that it was a calmer and deeper way of embracing things as they are. That had not occurred to me. And it seemed like maybe our characters were after a truer joy.
Craig Lucas's play, Ode to Joy, is currently at the Cherry Lane Theater. It stars Catherine Irby, Arliss Howard, and Roxana Hope. My great thanks to Catherine, Arliss, and Craig for being on our show today.
Thanks
Thank you.
For having
Thank
us.
Thank you.